Hello, it is June 18th, 2014. This is episode 433 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. Today's death, Alan Berg, who died June 18th, 1984. Berg was a lawyer in Chicago who had to quit his practice because of constant seizures. Turned out he had a brain tumor, and when it was removed, he made a full recovery and opened a clothing store in Denver. While there, a local radio personality was impressed by him and had him as a guest on his show. When that personality left his show, Berg ended up taking it over. A shock jock star before there was such a thing, Berg's liberal politics and his tendency to berate his dumber guests both made him a rising star, his show aired in 30 states, and a target of hate groups, particularly anti-Semitic ones. 30 years ago today, Berg was returning from dinner with his ex-wife when he was shot 13 times by members of the Aryan Nation, one of whom admitted he would call into the show to goad Berg into a fight. He also, after serving time for Berg's murder, claimed he was innocent, but admitted, quote, "The only thing I have to say about Alan Berg is, regardless of who did it, he has not mouthed his hate whitey propaganda from his 50,000-watt Zionist pulpit for quite a few years." Berg's murder was the basis of the Oliver Stone, Eric Bogosian film Talk Radio, which is an incredible movie that you should watch on Amazon Prime Instant right now. Berg was 50 years old. Here in Athens, though, it is nearly Wednesday. I'm Will Leach. I thank you for spending part of your day with me. We're going to hold off on shows for a while. I got a hectic period coming up here, but we're going to do shows after every U.S. men's national game because I, like you, I suspect, continue to kind of lose my mind about how fun that was. And I'm very elated to have on today Josh Dean. He's the author of the book Show Dog. He's a founding editor of the late lamented New York Times Play magazine. He's writing daily on GQ.com about this U.S. soccer team. He also wrote daily for New York Magazine for me 4 years ago about the World Cup. He is awesome and loves the U.S. national team, is an American Outlaws member, and as you will see from our conversation, is extremely fun to talk about the U.S. national team with. Though, to be fair, I could talk to anyone about the U.S. national team right now for about 3 hours. That includes many inanimate objects. I'm kind of excited. All right, first off, thank you, Josh. As I've mentioned in the intro, we're going to be doing this after every U.S. game. So my first question for you is, you know, one of the things I love about U.S. soccer is when something great and really exciting happens, like it did the other day, it becomes like a "Do you remember where you were?" moment. So and just like kind of like Donovan's goal was 4 years ago. Where were you? Where were you watching the game? What was it like?
I was the same place I was for Donovan's goal, which is Zach Dempsey's, the American Outlaws outpost in New York City. Actually, the Manhattan outpost because there's a Brooklyn one. I actually live in Brooklyn, but I belong to the Manhattan chapter of the American Outlaws. That's the official U.S. supporters group. So I was at Dempsey's. It was crazy packed. It was crazy packed 4 years ago. And granted, those games were in the morning, so that may have something to do with it. This is after work, so people can drink more freely. But I got there at about 4:30 for a 6 o'clock game, and they were already turning people away. I was literally one of the last people to get in, and it was an insane scene of, I don't know how many people that place fits. It's several hundred, certainly, and it was bananas. Well, I mean, it was bananas at the beginning and bananas at the end and kind of funereal through the middle. But the best part is after the game ended and I went out into the street, it's on 33rd Street in Midtown. Literally, I would say at least 1,000 and maybe a couple thousand because there's other pubs on that street.
Yeah, that's the whole soccer. That's the whole soccer block, right? That's pretty much that area by like third, like sixth and fifth.
Yeah, between fifth and sixth, there's like four or five pubs there, and all of those bars had emptied out. And 33rd Street, which was not closed for the event, I should say, had been. The street itself was full of at least 1,000, if not several thousand people chanting patriotic songs. And it went on for like a half an hour, and the cops showed up, and they were just kind of like, eh, whatever. I mean, they're singing patriotic songs. You can't screw with that.
Yeah, that's going to be...
It was incredible.
Yeah, I do kind of love that, and I've written about this before, this kind of idea that, like, you know, the kind of patriotism you have. I found the type of people exhibiting open patriotism toward the U.S. soccer team are maybe different than the people I see openly displaying their patriotism in other contexts, is probably the best way to put it.
Totally, yeah. I have to say it's really the only time in New York City where it's acceptable to wear patriotic gear. And I don't say that because I think New Yorkers are not patriotic. It's just that the symbol of patriotism has been co-opted a little bit by one side versus the other. I'm not sure that's right, but it's just the way it is. So I think especially liberal-leaning people feel weird wearing American flags. During the World Cup, that's totally out the window. Like, you can wear like a bald eagle t-shirt and an Uncle Sam hat and like literally ridiculous red, white, and blue apparel. I mean, and that's what everyone was wearing on 33rd Street. It was crazy bananas.
Yeah, I love it. It's like the one time that the cops don't hate you.
No, they were totally into it. Like, they seemed really bemused, actually. And I suspect for English people that would be a really bizarre and unsettling scene, because when they're drunk in the streets, like, riot police come in.
Right.
But like here it's like everyone's hugging each other. I mean, I thought your column today was great because it kind of said what is the truth of soccer, really. This is like the one thing that unifies everybody. It's like the classless and you know, every sex, race, sexual orientation, nationality in this country. This one event kind of brings people together. I don't want to make too much of it. I don't think 300 million people are watching, but a hell of a lot of people are watching in a way that I think maybe Olympic hockey comes close, but still not, because that's a sport played by fairly small areas of the country, whereas soccer in the U.S. is this weird sport where it's played by, like, upper-middle-class kids in the Northeast and also, like, immigrant kids in all the cities. Everybody loves soccer.
Yeah, it's hipster patriotism. I'm trying to trademark the phrase. It's hipster patriotism. I love it.
It totally is. Although I'll notice in, like, inevitably in the comments under soccer stories online, there are people who use that. That's like just the latest way to malign soccer. It used to be like there aren't enough goals or everybody flops. Now it's like elitist hipster patriotism.
Right. And to me, and the great part about that is, and that's kind of what I was trying to get at in my piece, is at the bar, like, if you're like it. Everybody is just best friend. Like, so many things. Like, I think I made out accidentally with like half the bar, and just people, like, you know, that I have nothing in common with, would never come across really in other contexts. We're best friends. You know, that is one of the great things about it. So, you know, and I'm curious, before we get into like the details of the game and kind of looking forward a little bit. You know, as someone that's followed this for a long time, I've been a member of Outlaws for a long time. You wrote about the Cup 4 years ago for me in New York Magazine. You've been covering this a long time. Just the level of interest. Now, first off, obviously, you know, one of the reasons that the bar was so crowded, the bar I was at was so crowded, it was after work. It was 6 o'clock. You know, if we're in the South Korea Japan games, I don't know if all these people are making it to 3:30 in the morning for those games. So certainly there's an aspect of that. But certainly when you see the increase in interest in soccer across the board in the United States and that kind of level of intensity, does it kind of take you aback a little bit, considering maybe it wasn't that long ago that you were almost kind of on your own island with this stuff?
Oh yeah, completely. I mean, even though I was young, I remember 1990, which was the first World Cup we qualified for in 40 years. And it was like a bunch of college players getting decimated. And it was maybe on, like, I don't even know if the games were all shown live. And then, of course, 94 was here in the U.S. And that got a lot of attention because it was like a novelty. Like, oh, yeah. It's just this cute little soccer tournament's happening. And then, like, gradually, it's like, it definitely does feel, and I know, again, this is, like, something people use to, like, make fun of soccer. They're like, oh, every 4 years, people say this is the year that soccer has arrived. But I definitely feel it every tournament. And in the last 2 or 3 years especially, and this has been written about a little bit, like, the interest in even European leagues, and probably a lot of that has to do with TV coverage. Like, it's just, and I think some of it is like the kids who played soccer for years would grow up with like no one to emulate. So that, you know, you go to college and you got a scholarship and that was it. Like, now there are American players playing professional all over the place, and MLS is successful by most metrics. And so I think kids don't lose interest in soccer. And then you've got the whole hipster thing. And then it's like a lot of forces coming together where I really do feel like the interest is at an all-time high. And it's not just, like, casual fans tuning in for the World Cup. I think more people are getting into the sport. And I've like witnessing conversion in the media with sports reporters and writers. And you probably have too. You know, people who probably used to make fun of the sport are now like actually paying attention. I mean, my Twitter feed is like college football writers talking about the World Cup. I mean, I never would have expected that to happen 8 years ago, or maybe 4 years ago. You're starting to see it now. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, like even. You know, I think the line I said about this was that, you know, 10 years ago, you might have thought you were being clever by ripping on soccer, and now you just kind of sound like a moron. Like, now you just sound stupid. Like, and you sound stupid or, like, willfully, stubbornly. It's starting to feel like I found a lot of times when people are really fighting soccer, they kind of sound like the scouts in Moneyball.
Yeah, totally.
They kind of sound like they're hanging on to this thing by hook or crook. So I'm glad to see it. It's funny too, because you know people kind of obsess about the idea, like, well, it's never going to be as big as America is in other countries, which may or may not be true. But the fact is, America is huge, and we're kind of a niche country anyway. So you doesn't have to take that much of the market share to make the as big in the U.S. as it is in a lot of other countries.
And it, like, combine that with the fact that it really is that one thing that, like, I mean, you know, I was, like, on the Today Show this morning, all the hosts were, like, honorable, like, we're behind you guys, and I'm seeing, like, all these celebrities, like, country music singers, like, tweeting pictures of their U.S. national team jerseys. It's just, like, really, it doesn't have any party affiliation, and it's just a fun thing that, and I think, I certainly feel like, for the years that I was a big fan and other people weren't, part of what I liked about it was that we were always an underdog and that all the other countries made fun of us, not the non-soccer people, but the other countries that are good at it, and that not much is expected of us, so that when we win, it feels so freaking good, you know? It's like, it's not like being a fan of the Miami Heat or something, you know? It's like,
or the U.S. men's basketball team.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the Dream Team. It's like, oh, that's fun. We beat Lithuania by 75 points. Right, if we beat Lithuania in soccer, it's not going to be a blowout. You know? We'll beat them, but it's not like we're on an equal. I mean, we're getting better every year and every 4 years, certainly. And I think we're headed to a point where the U.S. will be a world class soccer country eventually. But we're still, you know, on a given day, we could lose to countries that are like the 10th our size, the 20th our size.
Well, yeah, I mean, it almost happened the other day. I think that kind of speaks to the idea. It's funny how I'm kind of glad we're doing this podcast, because originally we were going to do this podcast right after the match, and then we both kind of realized as we were putting it together, like, okay, wait a second, I'm still screaming and I'm actually a little drunk still, so maybe we hold off.
I lost my voice last night. I'm still a little hoarse, actually.
Yeah, so it's probably for the best that we did that, which is good, because I think now we can get a little bit more perspective on it, instead of just yelling, you know, America, fuck yeah, at each other for 20 minutes, which would be fine, actually, and maybe...
I mean, I can't promise to be any less irrational about the things I say about the U.S. national team, but at least, maybe less profanity, less screaming.
Yes, for now. But again, we have more podcasts left to come.
Totally.
Okay, so now one thing I think is important to remember, and I, you know, just kind of going back and watching part of the game again and reading a lot about it, it's important to remember that, like, I really don't think the U.S. played that great. that's actually one of the fears, is, you know, and some guys did and some guys didn't, but it did really feel that they were not in control for very long sections of this game.
Yeah, no, it was, it actually was not, with the exception of the first minute and the last few minutes, it was a fairly excruciating viewing experience, because, not only were we not in control, I've never seen a team, well, if we play Germany or Brazil or some, you know, they control possession, and we kind of expect that, and we wait for our moments, and we take our chances, and in this game, I felt like even when we got the ball, we were always going to lose it with them. Like that Ghana team was so fast and athletic. I mean, what I wrote today about it was that I actually think we'll look a lot better against Portugal and Germany, because Ghana outperformed us in the one thing we're usually really good at, which is athleticism and speed and power. We're usually the stronger, faster team. that team was crazy. It looked like there were like 14 of them out there. I felt like Michael Bradley, who's totally unflappable, like that guy is a robot, looked like he was going to crap his pants.
Yeah,
every
felt,
time he
that,
touched
that looked
the
like
ball,
one of the worst games I'd seen Bradley play, like at all.
Yeah, he was like passing it out of bounds. Yeah. And it was like, that was very hard for as a fan to watch, because it's like I've seen them play even recently against good teams and not look rattled, and they looked really rattled. I mean, Clemson afterwards said that it wasn't as bad as it looked, that actually what the strategy was, like, we know how fast Ghana is, we know they're going to come at us, so what we're going to do is take away the middle and make them drive the wings and cross the ball in the middle, which is what they were doing. And I started feeling a little bit better about it when I thought that, like, how many times did Tim Howard really do something that prevents it? Like, Tim Howard never looked very stressed in that game. Right. The defense looked crazy stressed the entire time. But it was kind of like once Ghana got within range of the penalty box, they couldn't figure out what to do.
They
were like
get
shooting
in.
It. From,
yeah,
they were like shooting it from 30 yards, like, right. And Howard would just like watch the ball go over
right.
the goal.
Right.
So I think two things. One, some of what Clemson's saying is true. They actually were willing to concede a lot. They were forcing Ghana to do something that they thought they could handle. And I also felt pretty good because the big weakness of this team coming in was defense. I mean, everybody was like, these four players have played a total of three games together. They're very inexperienced. They've looked terrible at times. They actually looked really good. I mean, Beasley got toasted a lot, but he was playing against a really talented guy who would toast a lot of players. But Cameron and Beasley and then John Brooks and Johnson, they looked really good. So if the rest of the guys can like play the way that we think they are capable of playing, I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. On the other hand, there's no way around it. That was an ass-whooping for 80 minutes that yeah. we got lucky.
Yeah, right. And it's funny how it's like take away – because it felt the whole game like they that Ghana was going to break through at some point. It just felt like by the end, you just like you're staring at the clock to go faster because, you know, it's just a matter of time and you just hope the clock runs out before it actually happens. And to me, one of the things I actually find kind of impressive about the U.S. team, even when they're not playing great or they're not that talented, as talented as maybe the teams are playing, that's not like you watch enough, particularly international soccer. You watch enough of it, and it becomes kind of clear that when a lot of times when a team gives up a goal like that, they either crawl and hide or they give up another one. And that was one thing yep. I kind of liked about this team. And one thing that I think is generally kind of, you know, it makes for a very exciting endings in a lot of ways. It's kind of like, it's kind of one of, people talk about how like the U.S. team traditionally doesn't have like a specific identity, but I feel like that's kind of an identity they have actually, is that they don't kind of crumble when something bad happens, which actually merges in well with the way we consider our national character and so on. So I do think that's something specific to not just this team, but even Bob Bradley's teams.
Yeah, if you remember the last World, I mean, I feel like I kept writing that over and over. It was like they almost required adversity to wake up, and that is a terrible way to go. Long-term strategy is not a good way to win a lot of games. But on the other hand, it is a great character attribute to possess, because, you know, you see teams like, I mean, Portugal, like, they just looked broken. Like, as soon as Germany scored on them, they just looked like shit. Like, you could just see it in their body language. You won't ever see that with a U.S. team. They don't, like, get down very much. And, you know, granted, we don't want to have to repeat the process of yesterday, which is just, like, basically watching the hordes run at you over and over, just fight a repelling attack after attack after attack. I did think that they managed that in a way that I hadn't seen before, where it was like they were getting killed and yet Ghana wasn't creating a lot of scoring chances. So that is the strategy. I mean, there are teams that do very well defending almost exclusively and waiting for the few times a game when they can break out and score. You know, I mean, Italy for years. I mean, Jose Mourinho's teams, you know, they just like 1-0 is a great outcome if you play good enough defense. Now, you don't want to completely give away possession like we did. I mean, that's really the thing I would be most worried about, was that when we did get the ball, we gave it right back, and I'm just not used to seeing that. So hopefully that was a weird – I just think they looked just freaked out by, like, God, how fast are these guys, and why are they not ever getting tired, and how come there's always three of them every time I turn around? It was crazy. Like, It was crazy.
Yeah, we kept in the bar. Of course, obviously, I live in a college football town, so everyone relates everything to college football. But I think the common reaction was that, like, most of the just the way the Ghanaian players' bodies were, they were joking that they that like the general tendency to be that they all were like those awesome college football prospects right before they either get massive or like really fat, just like this pure athleticism.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like just like one solid muscle from I mean, and their jerseys kind of show that off because they wear like skin tight Under Armour, like size zero jerseys.
Yeah, exactly.
I was super impressed. I mean, the thing about Ghana, and like I did hear some criticism. You know, again, like I always pick up on the criticism that pisses me off, where people are just, oh, it's the 37th ranked team in the world. Oh, it's this little team from Africa. Ghana made it to the semifinals last time. They advanced out. Their under-20 team won the World Cup two cycles ago. They're a very good soccer country. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Portugal. They'll give Germany a good game. It's sort of like people are like, oh, big deal, it's Ghana. It's like, no, actually, that is a good team. And that the thing about why people call that ours the group of death is that it's four teams. There's not really an easy out in that group. I mean, I think Costa Rica surprised some people. A lot of people thought in that group Costa Rica was a weak link, but that was the one game where you can kind of cruise a little bit. In this group, you can't cruise at all. Like, every game is going to be tough.
Yeah,
and the U.S. can't, you know, and Germany looks at the U.S. the same way. I mean, I think they're like, shit.
Yeah.
The U.S. is going to play us hard.
Yeah, I was talking to George Carisci from Howler on the podcast last week. He said the thing that makes this the group of death is the United States. Like, that's what makes it the group of death. Is it like if it's Honduras, no one considers this the group of death. Like, the fact that the U.S. is the team in there makes it that scarier, which would make it all the more impressive than if they got out. And you know, that kind of leads us to moving forward. You know, the game Sunday, which I think it's funny. Like, if we thought it was crazy on a Monday afternoon at 6 o'clock. On a Sunday at 6 o'clock, I think after everyone's watched videos of people going crazy all week, I think it's going to be pretty nuts wherever people are on Sunday. And I'm assuming, are you going to be back at? Will you be back at Dempsey's?
Actually, no. I'm going to be out of town. I'll be watching it perhaps alone in a room with my family, which will be a totally different dynamic. It'll probably be very frightening for my wife and children.
Yeah, it's funny. I generally find, like, I always joke about, like, with Cardinal playoff games, I generally don't like to watch them in public just because I'm too insane. Like, I feel like with U.S. soccer, it's a little different just because it's such a collective experience. But for me, like, you know, I get so focused in a lot of ways. Unless I'm in a room full of only Cardinal fans, I almost don't want have someone I kind of know all of a sudden start asking me, so, Sports on Earth, huh? That's a good site. Tell me about it. I'm like, get out of my face, man. You know, so.
I know. I'm of totally two minds about that because usually, like, when I watch U.S. soccer throughout the year, friendlies or qualifiers or stuff, I mean, for the big ones, I like to be in groups because it is such a collectivist. It's like it's such a joyful, cathartic thing to be in those crowds or, like, misery, you know, feeling better in a group. But sometimes, I mean, I do like to focus and listen to the commentary and, like, be having eight conversations on Twitter and things that I don't do when I'm in bars. I mean, I think it's probably in general a much more fun experience. And I'm, like, probably much more stressed out at home because I'm, like, hyper-analyzing. But in this case, I have no choice. So I most likely will be well. I'll be back at Dempsey's for the Germany game, but most likely I will be alone terrifying my family.
I pretty much do that all the time anyway, so I don't know why soccer would be any different. When it comes to, so I mean, look at this game. Obviously, the major concern is Altidore. It looks like he's going to be out. It doesn't seem to be too surprising. It's been very funny to see. To me, the only time I want anyone saying that Landon Donovan, obviously you can't put Landon Donovan on the team. The only reason I want anyone trying to make that argument is so he won't be on television anymore. He's shockingly bad on television. Right?
He is.
He's so bad.
Yeah. I mean, his commercial is great.
Oh,
the
commercial's
EA
very funny. But as like an analyst, he's stilted and nervous and won't say anything interesting. I mean, I understand why ESPN did it, and I really generally feel like they do a good job in the World Cup. But man, like, yeah, Donovan, I don't know, has a future in television broadcasting.
Well, he's actually a very smart, thoughtful guy, but yeah, he's not comfortable. I mean, he's always been a little socially awkward. He's a bit of a weirdo. That's how he got himself in this predicament in the first place. Like, Klinsmann's still mad at him for his walkabout. And that, like, what professional athlete at the height of his game goes to Cambodia for 2 weeks and play 2 months and play soccer on the beach. I mean,
in the middle of qualifying with a new coach.
You know, actually, that's funny. I watched Mexico-Brazil today with Kobe Jones, like all-time most capped U.S. Mm-hmm. player, and we talked a little bit about Landon, and they played together, obviously, for a long time, and even on the Galaxy together in MLS, and he was, like, as shocked as anyone else, and I said, well, do you think that walkabout was a bigger deal? Like, would his teammates have been pissed that he left during qualifying? And he said, yeah, I mean, no one will admit that publicly, but I'm sure that's the case. And I totally would have understood it if at that point Jurgen had said, hey, you know what? If you don't want to be part of this team, you're not part of this team. It doesn't work both ways. You're either with us or you're not. Like, that would have made sense to everybody, but the fact that he came back into the camp and got the MVP at the Gold Cup, that just made it all seem weird to him.
Yeah.
All that said, yeah, you're right. It kind of doesn't matter anymore. People said, oh, my God, we need him to replace Josie. He doesn't play Josie's position.
Right.
The problem with the team now is that we don't have a person that plays Josie's position. Terrence Boyd, one of the last cuts Clemson made, is Josie's sort of the closest thing we have to a second Josie, a big, fast hold-up striker. Johansson, I think, has got tons of potential and will be a star for this team. But he plays off of a striker. Like he's not physically strong enough to go fight with center backs and get the ball and hold and wait for his teammates to come in. I mean,
so is Klinsmann going to drop the diamond? Is he going to have to drop the diamond? I think I don't know if he's going to do it, but that does seem to make a little bit of sense because so much of that diamond stuff is based on Altidore kind of like taking that pressure off. It feels like without him, maybe you switch it up. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think either I think one of two things. Either he'll try to play Wondolowski up there, but Wondolowski is a poacher, which means he's, like, very good at being in the right place to score the garbage goals. But he's, like, you're not going to play an 80-yard through ball to him the way that Bradley does to Josie. Or you might see Dempsey up top by himself and somebody like this Giroud, like a more creative midfielder, come in. And then, yeah, I mean, what does that do to the other? I don't know. It's like I hate to break up Bradley Jones, and I can't believe I'm saying this, Beckerman, a guy that I like publicly lobbied against and hated for so long because I felt like he was the kind of U.S. player that we used to have, which was like slow and not super talented, really scrappy. But he's I've totally come around on him because
he works with what they're doing now. He works specifically with what he's trying to do.
And he has no delusions about what he is. His job is to, like, stand in front of the defense, break up attacks, don't make stupid mistakes, pass it to the outlet guy, whether it's Jones or Bradley, and then get back in position. And what that did, and I was shocked at how well it did, it, like, freed Bradley up to go nuts and be, you know, for those 2 years when Bradley was playing a defensive midfield, we didn't realize how good he is at offense. But he scored 18 goals 1 year in Holland. I mean, the guy's talented on offense. He just also is very talented on defense. So we kind of needed him to do both.
I kind of love the, I have to say, as a general thing, I love their Jermaine Jones moment that's kind of happening right now. Like, I really love it. Like, it's funny because he was such kind of a polarizing guy for a while, but now, like, speaking of guys that people were wary of that love now, it feels like Jones is the guy that everybody loves.
He was awesome last night. I mean, we lose that game if he doesn't play. He was everywhere, like, breaking up attack. He'd like, stalled their attack more often than anyone else. He didn't make any mistakes. He obviously made that awesome little pass to Dempsey at the beginning. But maybe the like, most valuable moment in that game for him was when Montari, he had that tackle and Montari jumped on him and got in his face. I mean, Jones has a reputation as a hothead. He's been suspended in the Bundesliga for, I believe, kicking people. I mean, he has more yellow cards than any of us can count. And that was a moment where we were all like, oh, my God, he's going to, like, punch him or bite him or kick him. Or, like, which you would understand because the guy was on top of him screaming in his face. But he's obviously matured, and he didn't do anything. And he just put his hands up, like, yeah, sorry, dude. I mean, the initial tackle was probably a little hard. That's a really good sign because I know a lot of American fans live in, like, perpetual fear of the Jones red card. Like, it's like Pepe for Portugal. I mean, it was just like everybody who knows Portugal knows that Pepe is going to do that from time to time. Like, so stupid.
And it worked out perfect for us, which kind of leads us into that. You know, we're going to know now, Germany and Ghana play on Saturday. Now, once again, we're in this weird kind of spot of rooting for Germany, which is not a bad place to be. Because I think as it turns out, if Germany wins, if the U.S. wins, they're automatically through. Like that clears out Ghana out of the way. And then, so it's funny because, you know, Portugal, they had a hard time qualifying. Pepe's out. You know, they had this kind of pretty open meltdown and collapse very early on. The U.S. has, if a draw is perfectly fine, as long as the U.S. doesn't lose like 6-1 or something to Germany when they play. It does feel like everything is lining up perfectly for the U.S. in a way that makes me extremely nervous.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's amazing how, like, such an emotional win like last night, you start believing anything is possible, even though objectively, if a person from another country would be like, you do realize you guys got your ass kicked, right? Like,
right. And you're about to play two of the top five teams in the world.
Yeah, I mean, on the other hand, like, I actually thought we were more likely to beat Portugal than Ghana anyway. So I feel like I was thinking a tie would be great against Ghana. I felt from the beginning like we can beat Portugal and we will beat them. I think tying them is very possible. I think that team looks fragile to me. They look like they could be this year's France in the middle of the meltdown. Not only is Pepe out, Contral's out. They left their left back is one of the best players. The two of their starting defenders are out. It's possible their starting forward is out. Ronaldo looked really sulky. He was like throwing his hands in the air every time someone missed a pass to him. He's like already kind of hedging his bets, saying like, I don't need to win a World Cup to prove myself.
Right.
I mean, which is not to say that they might not come out and play scrappy and fight for their lives and play great. Or maybe some of their subs. I mean, I don't know who's on Portugal's bench. They may have awesome guys on the bench. So, I may be being totally irrationally confident about it, but I feel really good. I'll be super bummed if we don't at least tie, and then I think we could win that game. And the nice thing about it, if we win it, we're through. You know, we can kind of rest guys against Germany and play people like Julian Green, who, you know, you kind of don't know what you're getting with some of these players. I mean, the nice thing about, there's no nice thing about an injury, but Beasler got hurt last night. You would never want to put a 21-year-old defender making his first official start or appearance for the U.S. into a World Cup game against a really fast team. But Brooks looked, I mean, he had one really potentially near disaster.
Right.
He gave the ball away in the box, which was, but then he like immediately recovered and made the tackle. But other than that, he looked awesome. And I don't just mean the goal. I mean, he's 6'5", he's boss in the air. He's got great, I mean, what Clemson always says about him is he's a great passer. He's got great touch. I mean, I think, by the next World Cup, we'll be talking about him. He'll probably be playing for a major club, and he'll be like in the discussion for one of the best center backs we've ever produced. So I think it was kind of, that was the case where an injury may have been good for us, because I think it looks like Beasley's going to be okay, but now we know we've got another guy to bring in. Josie's another issue. I mean, hamstrings. I'm a Mets fan. I mean, I still have nightmares of Jose Reyes' hamstring. It's just like, I feel like those things never heal.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And at least until they get to Canada. And I think that's that fixes it. And let's not get carried away. You know, I want to get really excited too, because I feel like it feels like the U.S. way to do this, if they're going to advance, is to actually lose to Portugal and then, like, get a result against Germany and then Ghana upsets Portugal or something. Like, it feels
and
like...
And make it run goal differential. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you're right.
Like, it doesn't... Like, there's an easy way to do this. The easy way is to beat Portugal. Because I do think, though Ghana is fine, it's hard to see them beating Germany or even drawing Germany, which means you're literally in the position that all you have to do is win against a team that is clearly freaking out, clearly struggling without one of their best defenders, in a lot of trouble. This is exactly when the U.S. loses.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's true. I mean, it's very easy to start walking down that path. You're like, oh yeah, we're going to beat them, and then we're going to Germany.
Yeah, we'll
will be
rest
fine.
Everyone for the Germany game. I love that you said
and then, yeah, and then you're like, well, and then like we'll probably play Belgium. Maybe it'll be Russia. Like Belgium's really good, but they look terrible against Algeria. So I mean, it's like, you definitely like can get really far down the road where you're like, I mean, that's one of the fun things about this. It's sort of, I remember 98 and even 2006, I was in Germany where it was just like, I felt like we had no hope. And 98 was just abysmal. We lost to Iran. It was just like, at least the exciting thing is like we have hope, and we've seen enough good performances out of this team and versions of it that it's not crazy to feel like this. I mean, I know, like, Roger Bennett, Michael Davies. I mean, to some extent, they're taking out the piss by saying the U.S. is going to create and they're going to make it to the final. But they also actually do believe that we're a decent team. And they come from England, where people always think their team is better than it is. I think here we kind of expect that our team isn't as good as it is. Like, even last night, everyone's sort of like, oh, yeah, we got lucky. We're not that good. But I think we're better than people think we are, and still definitely not as good as a team that should probably make the quarterfinals this year. I mean, if we were to make even the second round, it would be awesome result. I mean, Klinsmann keeps saying that. So anything beyond that would be like, yeah, he's going to look like a genius.
That's what I mean. And that's that to me, you know, what's interesting, talk about advancement. If the U.S., and it's funny because we're going to talk again Sunday night, and I'm telling you, each of us are going to be sitting here being like, I can't believe that we actually said the words. Oh, we can rest some guys against Germany. Oh, I can't believe we did that. We deserve everything that's happening to us. And then we'll get down again, and then something weird will happen in Germany. But, like, it does – when you realize that, you know, all people have been talking about since the draw is – you think about it has been, they, you know, if they just get out, if they can just get to the round of 16 out of this group, what an unbelievable success that is. Assuming that Germany beats Ghana on Saturday, which again seems pretty likely, it's staring you right in the face. Like, this is the opportunity. And again, oftentimes in the past, they've not taken opportunity when it's been handed to them. And it's sitting right there.
Look at the last World Cup. I mean, that draw set up perfectly for us. I mean, I was like already looking at the semifinals and thinking, like, I mean, actually, you know, this happened in 2002. I mean, we outplayed Germany in a quarterfinal, and even to this day, a German will tell you we were the better team. We would have played South Korea in the semifinals. Like, there was a very good chance that team could make it to the final. That's crazy. 2010. I mean, if you look, we get out of the group, we get Ghana. We would have had to play Uruguay. Looked beatable. I mean, it was like, again, there was a pass in the semifinals that looked like we may never get this deal again. Yeah. And we actually, you know, for that the Ghana game in 2010, were the better team in the second half in overtime, and that was a situation where they scored a fluke goal and we lost, and that's soccer. You know, Ghana's probably saying the same thing about us today. They're like, well, we lapsed twice and we lost. But that, you know, that's soccer. And that's why, you know, it's not crazy to say that on a given day, the U.S. could beat Germany. You know, I mean, Mexico almost beat Brazil today. It's like, yes, if we play with Brazil 10 times, they're going to win 9. But that one time could be in the World Cup. You know, we are good enough to score goals against those teams. And I think last night showed we're good enough to defend against great teams. So, like, as crazy as we sound, and we do sound crazy, like, objective soccer fans will be like, I can't believe you're assuming you're going to be Portugal.
And then we'll rest everyone. Yay!
But this one makes it so fun, too. It's like, I mean, I'm just glad to have hope, man.
Oh, totally, totally. Okay, my last question for you. Actually, two more things. One is a real quick one. You mentioned Mexico. It's weird. I find myself, obviously, I love the Mexico rivalry, and I was I was in Columbus this year for the Dos Acero game, the one that qualified. I was very lucky to be there. It was a really awesome experience, and so I know our thing with Mexico. I still find myself like an Illinois fan watching Big Ten teams in the NCAA tournament that I've been rooting against all year. I find myself rooting for the CONCACAF teams. Do you do that?
I do, except for Mexico. Although, you know, it's weird today. I wasn't, like, I mean, I hate some of them, you know, Rafa Marquez especially, and I, as a team, yeah, it feels wrong. But I wasn't hating them as much as I thought that I would. And I definitely root for Costa Rica. I mean, I psyched for Costa Rica. Honduras looked terrible. But, I mean, for a couple of reasons, it's fun. It's good for us if our region is good, because everyone laughs at our qualifying group. It's like, well, I mean, some of those European groups have, like, Andorra and Latvia.
Right, so it's sort of like San Marino.
It's like, I would like to see England go to Costa Rica and play on the road. You will lose. It's hard, you know? It's like, so I'm not going to go so far as to say I root for Mexico, but I feel like I don't hate them as much as I thought I would. And sometimes I was definitely cheering for some of those Ochoa saves.
Oh yeah, he was so awesome that, like, no matter what, it was hard to not root for him to keep it going.
Yeah, he played great. I mean, definitely man of the match. That was probably the best goalkeeping performance of the tournament so far.
Yeah. So, and also my last question about other teams. Do you root for England? I find myself rooting for England.
Totally, I definitely root for England. I mean, I root for them. because I know a lot of the players in the Premier League. I root for them more than that because I love their fans care so much, and they just get their hearts broken again and again and again and again and again. And it's like, I'm tired. I don't want to watch that happen. You know, I want them to do well. I mean, I honestly think that we are almost, you know, people are going to get pissed at me for saying this now, equals as soccer nations at this point. Like, I feel like if we played England 10 times, maybe they win 6, but probably we split 4 or 8 ties and we each win a game. Like, we're not that far behind England, but they'll never get over the fact that they won a World Cup and that they should win another one. And they really believe every time this is the one. And, like, for the past 4 World Cups, they had the so-called golden generation with Lampard and Gerrard and Beckham and now Rooney. And they just haven't been able to get over the hump. And I would really like to see them do it. I don't think they're going to win the World Cup, but they actually looked, they were fun.
They were fun, right?
Great game.
That was, like, a really fun team.
And dynamic. I mean, that was a fun game. Italy looked great, too. Pirlo was my spirit animal.
All right.
So
final question. If we're going to do this again on Sunday, we both have to give some predictions so we can give me an official prediction for what goes for the just give me the score on Sunday and then give me who scores our goals if we score goals.
I'm gonna make the same prediction I made for Ghana, which is wrong, which is 3-1 US. Goals by two for Dempsey, 1 for Johansson.
Yeah, I'm going. Not even skeptic. I just feel like this. It can't possibly be that easy for them to do it. I'm actually. I think they're. I'm going to pick a 2-1 Portugal win, and then something crazy. I am. I'm picking 2-1 Portugal. It just. It feels just the vibe of this stuff. It feels like we're gonna. It feels like if they're gonna advance, they're going to do something weird against Germany. It just kind of has that. It has that up and down. I've got Slovenia and Slovakia flashbacks and all sorts of weirdness. So I'm picking 2-1 Portugal, and then we'll talk about Germany. And then so you can throw in my face after we win, and we do this on Sunday night, probably a lot more drunk than this time.
Definitely a lot more drunk.
All right, thanks, man. Have a great time. Have a great time with your family, and I will. We will do this again on Sunday night when we have advanced when we like. Let's see. Do we start Romano? Do we start Romano? Do we start a third? Is it Guzan? Who are we relaxing?
Guzan.
Yeah, who are we relaxing in for that third game against Germany? I kind of like the idea of having that conversation.
Me too.
All right, take care, man. Have a great time, and I'll talk to you Sunday.
All right, go USA.
All right, thank you to Josh Dean, the first of our series of U.S. Men's National Team podcasts. You can follow him on Twitter at JoshDean66, JoshDean66. You can also read his stuff daily at GQ.com throughout the World Cup. Again, as I said at the beginning of the podcast, I will, because of a kind of a hectic period, is probably the best way to put it, over the next week or so, perhaps even longer than that. The podcast will be somewhat a little bit more sporadic, not as regular as I suspect you have become accustomed, or I hope you have become accustomed. But we will definitely continue to do podcasts after every men's national game. Hopefully that will not mean there's only 2 more to come. But Josh and I, if you liked this today, and I hope you did, Josh and I will be doing this after every game, probably more alcohol-infused than we were this time. So, anyway, thank you. This is the Willie Sanchez podcast. I'm sorry, while I was doing that sign-off, my MLB Game Day app popped up and started talking to me. So, hey, you know, that's me being loyal to the company here at MLB Advanced Media. I use their products, and sometimes they interrupt my podcast. I don't know if you even heard that, but I heard it was in my ears. Anyway, professionalism, dignity, always dignity. Anyway, this is the Willish Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We will be back probably Monday morning with a post game of USA Portugal. I can't wait. I'm sure Sunday is going to be fantastic for you and me and everyone that is in the Sabia Sports Bar. USA, USA, USA. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday.